It's a new year, it's even a new decade, but some familiar friends dominate this first media talk of 2010. Coming up...
May I introduce some men who are never happier than when helping an air traffic controller guide in a jumbo. It is, of course...
Right now.
Have you missed us, ladies and gentlemen?
It's the end of the world as Jonathan Ross announces he's leaving the BBC. Also in the podcast...
I just hate what you've done.
Oh, if they ever make a musical version of The Exorcist, you'd be starring in it, darling.
Everything you wanted to know about reality TV but were too scared to ask. We speak to Uber producer Nigel Lithgow about creating a wealth of global entertainment brands. And...
The headlines of the week, the death of Lord Stockton, the fire tragedy in Puerto Rico, and the safe return of Samantha Etheridge.
Maura Stewart is confirmed as Chris Evans' newsreader on his new Radio 2 breakfast show. We ask, where are the rest of the women of a certain age in the BBC's newsroom? Happy New Year, everybody. I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. It's snowing. Gordon Brown has survived another attack on his leadership, but hey-ho, we're all here, so let's crack on. Joining me in the pod are a pair of pundits, as ubiquitous on the media merry-go-round as David Tennant, about whom more later. Emily Bell is The Guardian's Director of Digital Content. Recently heard Emily on Front Row discussing the cultural high points of the noughties. Are you ready to step down to our level?
I was going to say, I'm rolling in the gutter this week.
Good. Also here in the studio is Stephen Brook, Media Guardian's press and publishing correspondent. Brookie, is
Sky News, Jonathan Ross.
Is it
last night?
Is it true that you formed a double act on LBC over the weekend with radio god Ken Livingstone?
I did too. Yes. Or, thanks for listening, Matt. I didn't think anyone else was.
I didn't. The producer did. All for a modest fee, I trust. Now, listen, Jonathan Ross may be our top story, but the big news is that we're also joined by a genuine A-lister, super producer, judge, and reality TV's original Mr. Nasty, Nigel Lithgow. Thank you for coming in, Nigel. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent.
I'd preferred better weather to come to.
Yeah. Well, yes. I'm sorry about this. Obviously, you're used to the LA sunshine, but you've come in at just the right time, actually, for the big media news story of the year, and that's the news that Jonathan Ross has quit the BBC. The corporation's highest paid star, on a deal believed to earn him £6 million a year, announced that he won't be renewing his contract when it comes to an end in July. Emily, what's your reaction? Jump before he was pushed?
I don't know, is the honest answer to that, but I suspect that it will come as a relief to the BBC because Jonathan, for absolutely no fault of his own, has come to embody. He's the personal embodiment for everything that the BBC has done badly in the past 12
well, it's not,
18 months.
It's not through no fault of his own. It's through a completely ill-judged...
No, parent and child. The BBC are in charge here.
Right, okay.
If they're paying him that, they're paying him that. That's not his fault. He's just asking, you know, if they... cocked up the PR, if they were stupid enough to let him go on a pre-recorded show,
yes,
make a bit of an arse of himself and let it go out on air, you know, yes, he was complicit in that bit of it. And then actually, you know, the PR handling of that was disastrously bad. So in a way, what I'm saying is that the BBC is under fire for wage structures, its general kind of business management as a public service broadcaster, and for, you know, really sort of poor PR handling of things where it ought to know how to have a journalistic response to big stories. And so because Jonathan's embodied that, actually for the BBC, the best result is for him to go. And I think creatively for them...
And for him, perhaps.
And for him, absolutely, it's the best thing. Because what he to me, as a Jonathan Ross fan, in the past year, I think his pre-recorded radio show doesn't quite... cut it.
Yeah.
I used to love his old show, and this one has that slight sort of, he doesn't look that happy on his evening chat show, I don't think. I thought he looked uncomfortable at the ITV Comedy Awards, and when I saw him on Big Fat Quiz of the Year on Channel 4 with Russell Brand, I thought, that's it, he must be off.
Which we watched, so you don't have to. Stephen, Emily talked about the BBC's sort of PR handling of it. This week, as soon as it came out on Thursday, you got the feeling that the BBC was on, you know, caught on the hop a bit.
Yes, and I think that it was curious to be in the newsroom because PA put up a one-line, you know, slug saying that he's announced he's off. On the BBC website, nothing. Phone up the BBC. Why is there no statement? Because, you know, these are the people that have stage-managed every big event when they lost Neighbours. Was it Peter Fincham appeared on the BBC News Channel to announce it to everyone else? Whereas here, I think he gave it to the Press Association to put the announcement out. BBC didn't have a statement ready. And I think that tends to reinforce the fact that it was very much his decision to leave and not the result of them cutting him loose. I don't think they had reached the stage of forming a decision about what they wanted to do with him when his contract ends in July.
Now, Nigel Lithgow, before you became a star-studded reality judge, you were actually you were head of light entertainment at LWT.
Yes.
And you have a connection to Jonathan Ross.
I brought Jonathan to ITV, yes, for the big, big talent show.
Yes, which we remember.
Which we all remember and love. It was a program that introduced Charlotte Church to the public. And in actual fact, it did pave the way for the BBC show because on London Weekend Television on Friday nights, we did the Jonathan Ross show.
So what happens when you're a television executive in charge of these kind of big shows and big talent, and it starts to go wrong in the way that that happened with Jonathan Ross? It's a difficult situation, isn't it?
Well, you know, it depends what you want. It appears to me, and I've been out of the country for some 9 years now, but every time I pop back in, there's a big stick beating the BBC. And I don't quite understand it because I'm not here to witness it. And as Emily said, you know, this embodied it again through Jonathan. And if I was Jonathan, I'd say, look, I've got my 6 million for the last few years. I'm just going to step away for a moment and let everything calm down, because it doesn't appear to me that he's ever been let off the hook. You know, he was suspended. He came back. Nobody left it alone. Hmm. And whether he looks, you know, good doing the show now or not, he's still a brilliant talent. And probably the best thing is now just to move away, take a breath. Yeah. And then see what's going to happen.
I think the really interesting thing about Jonathan, who since he sort of appeared on The Last Resort, was he has that, as Nigel says, he is, I think...
Have we forgotten how brilliant he is?
No, not at all. I think he is brilliant, because I think there are very few, and Nigel knows far more about this than I do, as a viewer, it seems to me there are very, very few people who have that thing of charm and connection with the audience. And it's
absolutely the charisma that comes across the screen. And also, when he did the film reviews on the BBC, he just settled into that brilliantly.
Well, you see, that's interesting, because I'm not sure. You see, I always felt he was less good when he was saying, I'm the authority on film, because actually what he's quite good at is sort of repping you as the audience. You know, he always felt like he was sort of on our side and just going a bit further. You know, it's like we were sort of kind of nudging him to go a bit further. And he clearly loves film, but the weird thing was that Barry Norman had that very sort of, you know, slightly sort of pompous I know about film. And Jonathan, to me, always seemed not quite in his element.
He felt cool for me. I'd sort of take on board what he was saying. You always make your own mind up.
But he is brilliant at connecting. And I think that the problem with it, the stuff about his wealth in the papers. Now, entertainers always earn a lot of money, but I think it's, you know, when it comes from the license fee, it gives you a particularly difficult relationship then with your audience. And I think that was the thing, is that, you know, kind of, it's very hard to do what Terry Wogan did, which is stay at that kind of level of national acceptability for a long, long time. And sort of, and it made Jonathan's transition to a bigger mainstream audience, so in other words, to slip into Terry's shoes.
Yes. All right. Well, what next for Jonathan Ross in a second? First of all, what next for the BBC? Does it mean, Stephen, that you think that now that Russell Brand's left and Jonathan Ross has left, can they get back to not being so obsessed about compliance?
And Wogan's left is the other thing. So it's a very different BBC. I know that doesn't fit, but what I'm saying is the BBC has changed now in 2010. It's a very different BBC to what we've had for last decade. I think they probably can. I think that the new...
Is it the end of the madness? You know,
it's the... Well,
so even... the rumours about Simon Cowell going there for £20 million a year are not true, are they?
He hates the BBC.
He hates them because they won't pay him the money.
I think even if we do get a new breed of edgy, talented comedians who want to push the envelope, the BBC won't...
Michael McIntyre.
Yeah. The BBC won't pander to them in the way that they gave, you know, oh, here, get your production company to make the show. And when, apparently, on Radio 2, when Russell Brand was being produced by various producers and they tried to rein him back, then he'd just go to Leslie Douglas and she would do what he said. I think that era is well and truly over. So the answer to your question, I think, is yes.
So what next for Jonathan Ross? I mean, does he... you say, Nigel, a break.
Yeah. And what I want to ask Nigel, because this has been in the ether today, is the US. Would he work in America? Could he go off and work for some US network?
Yes, I think he could. I think, you know, he did very well of going over there and talking to Americans in a number of his programs. He feels very comfortable out there. They like Brits. you know, when people like me and Piers Morgan can become sort of stars out there, people with real talent like Jonathan will, you know, do very well. At the same time, you have to find the niche. You have to find the groove to get into. There isn't really a chat show that is what he does. There isn't anybody like him out there. I suppose Jimmy Kimmel is the closest to that sort of irreverent humor. It's a tough one.
Is there anyone like him out here who might replace him? I mean, I suppose they've got a ready-made Friday night show. It's on a Monday at the moment with Graham Norton. You just move that.
The BBC got a lot of stick when Graham Norton was taken out of Channel 4 for a large sum of money. They couldn't really quite work out what to do with him. But it seems to me that that show
just shifted.
Shifts. Yeah. And, you know, actually, sort of Graham Norton clearly is the person who they're thinking, you know, Brucey, kind of, you know, that he's got a sort of a career trajectory now, which takes him from, you know, really sort of like marginal, trendy telly right into sort of the mainstream. And actually, kind of, that show would be good for him. But probably it's a good challenge for the BBC to have.
And they could do with on radio too, they could do with replacing him with a woman, couldn't they? Because God knows they need a woman on radio too, Stephen.
Well, the person who has filled in for him on occasions and done so very effectively, I think, in my humble opinion, is Lisa Tarbuck.
She's fantastic.
Lisa Tarbuck. Yeah.
People as different as Emily and myself both love Lisa Tarbuck, then I think Radio 2, you're onto a winner.
Excited for the fact that we are practically the same person, apart from some obvious differences.
Well, the thing is, I'm the youngest
guided,
here.
Sorry, how are you really? I've been guided by, probably by some margin, it should be said, I've been guided by BBC sources away from Lisa Tarbuck. But they wouldn't say why, but they're saying definitely not Lisa Tarbuck.
Was it because she's a woman?
Well, no, I don't think so. So,
Arlene Phillips, maybe.
Arlene Phillips.
Can I just suggest, in a toadying, sycophantic way, that Arlene and Nigel, I think they kind of all that's missing is a radio slot. More, actually,
why do we come to that later?
You don't even have to live here, Nigel. You can be, you know,
sounds
beamed
good.
In.
Sounds good. Do you know who I would book for a Friday night chat show? And you can turn your noses up at this, and you probably will. Is Piers Morgan. Piers Morgan has been sensational with talking to people. He's got charisma. He is interested. His own ego does not get in the way, and there's an ego there. It doesn't get in the way. Maybe I've become too Americanized.
Right, can I say Piers's Danny Minogue interview was very, very good.
Right, okay.
And I actually do mean that sincerely.
I would love the Daily Mail headlines if the BBC were to enter negotiations with Piers. Wouldn't that be great?
He works for them.
We need to move on here. But there's loads of comments on the blogs. I'm not going to bother reading them out. Go to the blog to read them. But the best Twitter comment came from Caitlin Moran of another parish.
As ever. She is very good.
Yeah, who said, not only is telly and radio going to be shitter, but I've now got to write 6,000 words on you leaving, you bastard.
6,000 words?
6,000 words.
She does exaggerate, but...
Time's not very interested in the meltdown of political politics or the kind of, you know, global climate crisis that's going on outside in the streets of London.
Well, unless it's
how
been,
bizarre.
Unless it's been mistranscribed.
No, she did say 6,000. I saw 6, that. 000, yeah.
All right. Well, good luck, Caitlin. We'll leave that there. There's more comment analysis and even a bit of video, too, on this on mediaguardian.co.uk. And I'm sure this is not the last time that we'll talk about Jonathan Ross on Media Talk. Back to our special guest, Nigel Lithgow. Now, Nigel... If we rewind the clock to the 90s, you were LWT's head of comedy and entertainment, responsible for commissioning shows like Gladiators, Blind Date, and then you became the driving force behind the singing, dancing and talent show phenomenons of the past decade, launching monster brands like Pop Idol.
Pop Stars was the first.
Pop Stars. I was just about to say, well, credit you with So You Think You Can Dance in America and the UK, and never mind Simon Cowell, Bruno Tonihulli, or indeed, John Turodi. You are, as we said earlier, reality TV's original Mr. Nasty in Pop Stars. Now, I've also pointed out that you were responsible for bringing Ice Warriors to
thank you so much. Yes.
So you are not the kind of, you know, your copybook is not entirely without blots.
No, I learned more from making mistakes in my life than I ever did from successes. I was also Bruno Tonioli's choreographer, but I want that in my CV.
Is this the...
this is like fantastic, isn't it? There's so many things we're learning today.
Was this the young generation?
No, this was a Grace Kennedy show, and Bruno was one of my dancers. For one of the shows, I fired him.
You fired him? Was he not very good?
He was terrible. Good personality, but very Italian.
Okay, listen, this is a detail that we don't need. You were the original kind of sharp-tongued talent show judge.
Yeah, from a line of sharp-tongued talent show judges like Mickey Most, Tony Hatch, Nina Mishkoff.
Mm. Better than act, though, because you seem quite sweet and nice here.
Well, if you look back at the show now, I'm not at all nasty. And even, you know, when I could have been nasty and said, look, you're too fat, you're going to have to lose weight because you've put weight on over Christmas and your ass looks big. I didn't say that. I said...
You're right, Nigel. I did immediately revive my dancing career.
They were going to be, you know, England's pin-ups and this group. You know, they came in and they said they're all a bit lazy. They've all eaten too much over Christmas. You're going to have to get them working. And I didn't. I went in there and said, Christmas is gone and the goose is still fat. And you gain the title Mr. Nasty. A lot of it was fun. A lot of it was you sang all the right notes. You just put them in the wrong order. You know, they were old music hall gags, a lot of them, for goodness sake. But the tabloids had something to bounce off. And I was very grateful because even in those days, you realized that the tabloids could actually sell your show. And without the tabloids, I promise you, Simon Cowell, X Factor and Britain's Got Talent would not be as strong as they are.
Is that a difference between the UK and the US?
Of course, yeah. The US doesn't have a national newspaper. USA Today doesn't have a lot of coverage, you know, and that's the only national newspaper.
And is that good or bad? Does it make it easier in Britain to kind of sell a show like that?
Sell or crucify.
Right.
Yes, either way. And you can never please everybody. You know, there was a lot of complaints when Arlene got removed from Strictly.
Yeah. And what do you think about that, by the way?
I think probably what they did was look at the success of Cheryl Cole on the X Factor.
And thought that we need a Cheryl Cole.
And, you know, it can't be ageism. God knows Len's older than Arlene.
It could be, you know, a sexist ageism thing, you know, in that it was because she was old and a woman.
Maybe if they'd fired Bruno again,
yes,
none
that would have been the way to
say it would have happened.
But it's amazing to read the critics this week about the show, and they said she's an overrated old age pensioner. I thought, my God, so am I. But, you know, and then somebody else likened her to Adolf Hitler. And I thought, what are our newspapers coming to that the critiques are almost libelous?
Yeah.
So I was quite shocked.
Do you feel that you've democratized television or have you dumbed it down?
Well, dumbing down is something that I've always taken pleasure in doing. I try to entertain, and I've laughed at bawdy humour for many, many years, and if that's being dumb, then I'm dumb. I enjoy entertaining. I am there to, you know, let people enjoy themselves away from the mundane lives they lead. At the same time, with So You Think You Can Dance, I truly believe we have affected the culture in America and have brought...
I mean, we should say it is a huge show over there, isn't it?
It also allows me to provide entertainment on mainstream television of the Alvin Ailey dancers, of ballet. You know, this is something that I grew up with as a kid. You would watch Sunday Night London Palladium, on would come Arthur Askey one week, and then on would come Margot Fonteyn and Rudolf Nureyev. And we had ballet on our screens. You know, there isn't a program nowadays, either in America or here, where you can watch that on mainstream television. You, of course, can find it on you know, the multi-channels that we have nowadays.
So what you're saying, really, is that is all the kind of comment about these sorts of shows, actually, they've been around for years in one form or another.
We've dressed them up in a different way, is the truth of it. They are variety shows. I don't see that Britain's Got Talent really is any different from the Gong Show or the same with Idol, you know, telephone in for X Factor or anything, any different from Opportunity Knocks. They are of their generation and it's cyclical.
The thing is, though, that this time round is that reality TV in general, and these shows in particular, have sort of become the lightning rod for people who moan about the state of television, or the state of modern television, well, don't they? In a way that they didn't
before. The people that don't watch them. I mean, there are millions and millions. You know, in comparison, American Idol in America gets between 30 and 33 million viewers. And the next program, no matter how great you think Lost, Grey's Anatomy, or any of these brilliant dramas are, is 50% of that audience. So the people that are calling them dumb and hating them, are the writers of Lost and Grey's Anatomy, are the ones that are, you know, most vociferous about it, but they are not the ones watching.
So what turned you from being, you know, a successful television, mostly
dancer,
television executive, into going in, you know, in front of the camera? Why did you make that choice?
I didn't really make the choice. Pop Idol, which I brought from Australia, which I was really the first one of these. Yeah. First time we saw behind the scenes, we saw the auditions. I knew I needed a sort of Mickey Most, Tony Hatch character that was going to be totally honest. And having seen it in Australia, they're far worse than we are. The Australians are really cruel, you know. Mm. I decided that I wanted Jonathan King to be that person. And I offered him the job, and unfortunately, he was unavailable shortly after the offer was put out. After Jonathan King, I invited a guy that I met on Record of the Year, which we were producing at London Weekend Television. He had charisma. He was pretty strong in his attitude. And it was, of course, Simon Cowell. Mm. And Simon Cowell accepted the job. And we did the deal. Granada did the record deal with Universal as opposed to BMG. And Simon Cowell worked for BMG. So BMG said, I'm sorry, you cannot do that show unless they give us the recording contract, which we didn't do. So he dropped out with a couple of weeks to go just before we went into production. And Claudia Rosencrantz, who was the controller of entertainment at that point at ITV, said, well, you should do it. You've had enough experience of auditioning. You do talent shows. You do dancing. Just go and do it. Hmm. And I readily accepted. So it was just something that happened.
But then you mentioned Simon Cowell. Of course, what then went on to happen is that he went on to create what, you know, has to be said, is not a dissimilar format to Pop Idol with X Factor. Took that to ITV when Sony BMG were on board with that, and that was a, you know, something of a tense.
Well,
time,
it was
it?
A tense time because Simon Cowell really took the format of Pop Idol, which Simon Fuller created. So obviously the tension, and don't forget, I was working with Simon Cowell and Simon Fuller in America at the time that they were suing each other. Mm. So it was a very tense time.
And how do you feel about Simon Cowell going on to, I mean, he's gone on to make a very decent living out of all this.
I'm totally jealous, without question, about the money he earns. And I'm delighted for him. Because I do think that we are gaining out of this, you know, at a time when the record industry is nosediving and nobody really knows how to make it survive. The same, you know, we haven't yet figured out how to use the web correctly in order to make money, I add quickly. Yes. And it will kill the industry. And when you look at something like Disney that made $2 billion, you know, the year before last, and then only 700,000 last year because DVD sales and everything are dying because they haven't got a window now of being able to get the money back.
I think we can say quite categorically that you and Simon Cowell, you have the better hairdresser.
I've got terrible hair. It grows too quickly. I never have the same bloody hairstyle from one day to the next.
Great.
Can I ask Nigel, are you well-behaved talent now, Nigel? Having been on both sides of things, are you now a delight
to
handle?
No, I'm not. You know, you get to know too much. And when you know too much, you know, nobody can bullshit me anymore. So when they turn around and say, oh, don't worry about not wearing the same clothes as you wore when we did that interview, we'll just slot it in. I said, no, you won't. You can't do that.
What's your most outrageous demand that you've made as the talent?
I try and get more money all the time.
Do you throw fits?
You know, I guess it's fair to say I'm earning more than your prime minister.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. That's, yeah.
Isn't that the line that they use all the time?
Yes, but then again, so is 75% of the BBC.
Yeah. So 75% of the population, for God's sake.
Yeah. All right. Excellent stuff. Thank you very much. Stick around for the rest of the show.
He is quite badly behaved, Sam. We like that, though,
yes,
don't we?
Absolutely. Now, if you've got anything that you'd like to say on all this, post a comment on the blog, guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. I'm Matt Wells. You're listening to Media Talk. Brookie, now listen, I know it's hot in here, but there's no need for you to go all Tiger Woods on us. I was suggesting that you might be taking your clothes off and revealing a buffed torso, but...
Okay.
Referring to the Vanity Fair scoop.
Okay.
Is Brookie on the cover of Vanity Fair?
It was just a lame.
No, I just thought you were when I was about to swing someone with a golf club.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that. No,
okay, right. I won't. I can if you want.
What did you make of it?
I think, well, a great scoop for them, and because that is not really his image at all.
It was. I thought it was weird. I thought it looked.
I think it is now.
It looked really. I don't know. It just looked a bit odd.
Looked wrong.
It? That's what it
is. Wrong magazine. Wrong person.
Yeah. Wrong.
Yeah.
A friend of mine bought the DVD for Christmas. A Tiger Woods' favorite 18 holes. I found out it was a golf video.
You were disappointed.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Listen. Sticking with the press, Evgeny Lebedev has features in GQ's Best Dressed list. Did you notice?
I did notice.
How did that happen?
We put a story through. I just think it's part of the whole GQ Condé Nast Evening Standard, shortly to be independent merry-go-round circle of. You write my column, I'll scratch your back.
Okay.
I'll buy your newspaper. Yeah. I'll distribute it free within the M25. Yes. We will destroy the rest. Are we talking about that today or not?
Which bit?
The Independent being bought and
well, we can,
free.
Yes, absolutely. It wasn't
we
on my list.
We don't have to, I was just suggesting it.
But do you think it will be?
Well, it seems as though it's going that way.
And so, and will it be turned into a free sheet, do you think?
Yes. That's well. If Lebedev...
has anything to do with it.
Buys
it,
yeah.
And is that a good thing?
Well, I think it's going to be quite a testing thing for the rest of us in the print industry. If you have, you know, your major centre of population with a free, newspaper with national staff, budget, etc. Mm. The Evening Standard, distributes about 600,000 copies
600,000, I think.
And a lot of the big broadsheets, which, you know, have a London sale, they don't have a London sale in excess of the distribution of the Evening Standard. No quality newspaper is selling 600,000 copies in London. If the Independent then try and replicate that success in the mornings, it could be quite grim.
It's a big test of free. I mean, it is interesting. I think it's really interesting. It is a big test of, you know, just as...
Of the model.
As just as on the web, we've spent the last 6 months chewing over the free pay.
Free versus pay,
You know, that actually kind of, you know, the free model, if you can afford to support it, and Lebedev seems to be able to... and it's, you know, what Nigel was talking about in terms of,
the threat to
industries that have grown up with a pricing structure at their basis. I think it's going to be, it potentially could be really quite alarming for the rest of us.
Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on that story. And what did you watch over Christmas on the television, Brookie?
Well, I watched Doctor Who.
What did you think of it?
How long have we got? I think probably 3 stars, 3.5 stars.
Yeah,
and I think possibly the bit I like the most, which everyone has been very complaining about, is the long farewell, even though when you actually die and regenerate, it's meant to happen in about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Under Russell T. Davies' swan song, it took about 20 minutes because he went round to all the old companions.
I quite like that bit.
I thought that was really sort of nice, but the episode was slightly flat. I don't think Doctor Who, as much as I love the program, does epic very well, and Russell has always insisted on having big epic Christmas episodes, and they don't somehow the sort of tone to me seems a bit wrong. But you know,
Matt Smith looked good.
Well, it looks fine to me, but my 5-year-old said I want the other one back. He said he has the wrong hair and he has the wrong everything.
Yeah, but 5 years old, first regeneration. He's, you know.
Well, it's your audience, isn't it? I don't know. Kind of, you know, it was big thumbs down for the 5-year old. He'll get ready. He'll come.
Will he watch the new series? Do you think, though, or would he go on strike?
Well, given that he will watch because of my very low level of parenting standards, as all my children watch an untenable amount
of
television.
You're not like Davina McCall, then?
Well, we're banning them for... God, no, I don't know what I would do without electronic entertainment in my house, Nigel, if you ever wanted a ready-made, you know, kind of set of... So it's almost like Beagle smoking, my children in television, it's like thing.
Sorry, in what way?
Well, you know, it's just kind of, it's like a constant kind of, it's almost like a lab in my house. We have Sky upstairs, we have Virgin downstairs, we have a Wii, and we have a... Shouldn't have.
You're a bad mother.
Well, apparently so.
They all seem
perfectly charming to me.
Yeah. But. Finally, in this ending up our news and brief section, I want to play you this ad.
We chill out on it. We fall in love on it.
We're at our best when we're on it.
And when it is over,
we never forget it.
It is the perfect holiday.
Don't just book it.
Thomas Cook it.
Yes, Emily, you've got your hand up.
Patricia Hewitt and Jeff Hu.
No, it's not. You should, Nigel. You should know. You should know. You should recognise the female voice here. It's
not Kim Marsh.
No, it's not Kim Marsh. No, it's
closer
not.
To home.
It's closer to home.
Closer to home.
Yeah.
Or closer to work.
Closer to work. Yeah.
Is it? Oh my God! It's Louise Redknapp.
I have to say, quite possibly the worst advert that's on television at the moment.
No.
It's shocking.
No, it made you pay attention. You've done a whole segment on it.
Exactly. They've got some free airtime out of us.
More
cheap, easily listening soundtrack.
I thought quite compelling, but when you hear the audio and don't see the visuals, it's sort of slightly saucier than it is when you watch the whole package, isn't it?
Even with Jamie Redknapp doing his shirtless golf, which is actually probably the best bit of the ad, I have to say.
depends on which way your bread is buttered.
Depends on which way your bread is buttered. That's absolutely true. The bit I don't understand is why didn't they change after all of that kind of new rebranding kind of stuff? Why didn't they change their strapline? You get to the end, and it's still that 30-year-old
don't book it, Thomas Cook it.
That's
but that's
a fact.
The kind of line for the chavs, isn't it?
Oh God, I can't believe you said that.
Hang on,
that brings it back to the audience.
Isn't it done in an urban sort of way now, with the rap? Thomas Cook it.
Sitting on that.
Time to move on. You can read about more of all those stories at mediaguardian.co.uk. And we're just going to finish up with a bit of none-too-radical feminism. The BBC's confirmed that Maura Stewart is going to be Chris Evans' newsreader when he takes over the Radio 2 breakfast show next week. She was, of course, dropped by the BBC in 2007 after 4 decades in front of the camera, sparking accusations once again of ageism at the organisation. Good news?
Yes. And do you know what? We old women, because I'm now over 40, therefore invisible to the media population, you know, there are going to be a hell of a lot of us because we tend to outlive you men.
Yeah.
And our lifespans are expected. And if we don't see people like ourselves on telly, we ain't going to watch it. So get used to it. Do more of it. And the answer to where are all the women in the BBC newsroom of a certain age? The answer is most of them are running it. Yeah. You know, to Helen Bowden is head of BBC News. You know,
not just
representation.
Also, over Christmas, BBC announced that they've appointed 4 over 50 newsreaders, haven't they? For Julia Somerville, Zainab Badawi, Fiona Armstrong, and Carol Walker.
They're also old. I don't even know who they are.
Zainab Badawi, over 50.
It's Zainab Badawi's over 50.
My God, yeah, I didn't look as good as she did when I was 20.
Did you know that Julia Somerville is Lady something or other because her husband's a sir?
I did actually know that because I've met Julia Somerville at an event. She's very nice.
And Fiona Armstrong is also, she's Lady McGregor because she's her husband is Lord McGregor of McGregor, of the McGregor clan.
So not only do we have all these old talent shows now back on TV and super recharged, we've got all these old newsreaders back who we thought had gone.
Did I see
a
picture of Jan Leeming naked?
You might. I don't know.
We have one just out there. You probably saw it in the foyer, Nigel.
It was in the Guardian.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Page 3.
Listen, I think
very diverse.
Let's wrap it up. I think it's time to say thank you to our special guest, Nigel Lithgow, as well as to Emily Bell and Stephen Brooke. Thank you very much for coming in. Brookie will be stepping into the presenter's chair next week, as I shall be otherwise engaged. Going skiing.
Are you going skiing with Jonathan Ross?
Do you know, that'd be good, wouldn't it? I'm afraid I'm not going skiing with Jonathan Ross. It's been a pleasure. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
In the meantime, post your comments on our blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or search for us on Twitter and Facebook. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Mills. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.